Evening. My name is Russell Stats. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's good to be here. This is step 11, so I'm allowed to talk about God. This will be a highly unusual meeting. I think I'll talk about God. You know, I usually. Those of you who've been around to some of my other steps know that from time to time I mention God. I've been restraining myself. The truth of the matter is that I do restrain myself to a certain degree here. I'm going to try to share some things with you about what it means to me, what the 11th step means to me, how it's worked in my life, because I do believe it's our stories that are important. They're the ones that disclose what we used to be like, what happened, what we're like now, and I want to read from the big book, and I'm going to read from a certain part of the big book, and so I believe that's important, but I think the greatest thing is our own individual stories, and I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable, but I'm not going to change my story to please somebody. I'm going to tell you the straight story, the straight scoop, and, you know, what do they say? Like, A is a giant toolbox, there's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door, and if I'm not your wrench, that's okay. I just want to honestly try to share my little journey with the 11th step and what it means to me today. And maybe somebody else will find it helpful somewhere along the way. One of the good things about staying sober for a while, I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 17th, 1981. I've slipped in almost every other area, but I haven't found necessary to take a drink since then, is it's not a theory to me anymore. It's not something that I have to try to figure out, you know, why does it work or what this thing is all about. I've been living it for 30 years, or at least trying to live it for 30 years. So I have experience with this thing in my own life. And so I'm going to try to personally share what's happened to me in 30 years. You know, obviously this is my personal journey, my personal experience in increasing and improving my relationship with God. And so it doesn't have to be your experience. You know, Where I was, you know, there's this line in the 12 and 12. I didn't bring the 12 and 12 up. I don't even want to read the line, but it goes through my mind all the time. I hardly ever think about it or really talk about it, but every once in a while I dwell on it, where they talk about the mind of an alcoholic before he comes in here. And what the word they use, which is an incredible word, I love this word, they say that for some of us, our minds are savage. Savage. A savage mind. You know, I'm trying to picture, you know, I think of savages. And I was, you know, on the way up here, I really don't, as you can tell, I really don't plan this stuff that much. Because if I plan it, then it's like, you know, what am I going to sound like? What am I going to say? Does this sound, I just let it rip. But it was really kind of stupid. I tried to think. It's always bad when I'm trying to think. I went for years praying that I could stop thinking. If I could only stop thinking. And finally one day I woke up and I stopped thinking. And to me it's just actually stupid to try to start thinking again. You know, once you stop that stuff, you know. But I did try to start thinking about what it was like when I first came in here. And I got to tell you something, I couldn't do it. I couldn't bring in the forefront of my mind. I mean, it was horrible, but I kept on trying to remember how bad it was with my mind. I'm just in too good a space right now to get crazy. Even though the world's kind of crazy. Now, I'll tell you what happens. Sometimes, and I mentioned this last time, and this is why it's so important for me to go to meetings and find newcomers. Because sometimes I'll be with a newcomer or somebody who's, you know, just newly in the program, and they'll start talking to me, or they'll start talking around me, and I'll start watching them. They're pretty animated, you know. And I'll see what's going on. I'll sort of discern what's going on. Sometimes they're nervous or anxious about something. And it reminds me, it's like, man, I remember when I felt like that. All the time. All the time. But I don't think that way anymore. But when I came, I guess the appropriate word would be, if I was going to think of a word, when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, my mind was savage. I had a, what do we call it here? The committee? Isn't that the term we use, the committee? I don't know what that means to you. When I think of the committee, I think of the 50,000 voices that are going through your brain, all at the same time, all sorts of different voices, all about you, and it's all bad crap. It's all bad crap about me and other people. I never wanted to think the way I thought about myself and other people because it was bad stuff, and it made me feel uncomfortable, you know, which is one of the reasons I drank. I used to always have to have something going, you know, like a radio on or a TV on or on the telephone, something going on because I couldn't stand the silence because I couldn't sit still. As a matter of fact, one of the things I said to myself is when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, after I stopped drinking, if you asked me what my problem was, I would tell you I was hyper. You know, I was just hyper. You know, I was just, everything sort of bothered me. A million, everything, it was like a thin breeze. You know, you looked at me the wrong way. Things didn't, everything, traffic bothered me. I mean, life was really, really difficult. And let me tell you something. This lasted, you get certain relief in AA. But I gotta tell you, for me, the savage mind lasted for years. Not weeks, not months, but years. So if you got 9 years sobriety or 10 years sobriety and you find that you still go through fits of anxiety, crisis, panic, why is this always happening? And you find that you sometimes get upset because you're still going crazy sometimes and the world is sort of overwhelming. I can tell you this, I went through that deal. And I can tell you this, I thought it was never, ever going to be okay. I thought the drinking would go and a lot of other things would go, but I thought I would never get to the point where stuff didn't bother me. And I'm not saying anybody gets there perfectly. I mean, that would be a lie. I mean, I have my moments. But there is a big difference between getting a little upset, you know, for 3 or 4 minutes a week and being in a state of being upset all the time. There's a big difference between high anxiety and having what I refer to as a Teflon mind, which I'm going to talk a little bit about. And so I want to talk a little bit about what happened to me. So I came in here with this sort of savage, crazy brain going on. And, you know, I remember writing, this is a big book I have. I got a lot of big books at home. This isn't my first big book. I don't know where my first big book is, but I can tell you this. I remember in my first big book, you know, I wrote notes and I underlined things and yellow and pink and green and all that sort of stuff. I went through this deal. I've read it thousands of times. And I absolutely remember that when it came to the 11th step, somewhere in my big book, when it talks about the 11th step, I wrote something, I don't know the exact words, but it said something like this. This is the step I'm the worst at. I mean, I wrote it, I said, this is prayer and meditation. I could not do the prayer thing. I could not do the meditation thing. I could not do that. So I thought of this as the worst deal. And I'm not even sure I'm still good at it, or whether I do it at all, or what I do. I'm just going to report to you what happened to me. That's the thing. You can figure it out. Okay? Now, you guys remember a show called Kung Fu? You know, here's the crazy thing. I'm 62 years old. So to me, I say the show Kung Fu, which was like very popular, David Carradine, you know what I mean? And to me, it was just like yesterday. But the truth of the matter is, what is that? That was like 20 years ago, right? What is it, 20, 30 years ago? What? 40 years ago? Wow. So I want you to understand this. I think of this show called Kung Fu, which means something to me, which I want to, and I want to tell you about this and how it means. And I got to realize, like, 2/3 of the people in here don't even know what I'm talking about, you know? So they'll just have to catch up. So the show Kung Fu, and I'm not going to go through the whole show, but the bottom line is, this guy's a Shaolin priest, and which means he's, like, great at Kung Fu. And he's beating up people, which I always like that kind of stuff. And so he lives in this temple where nobody talks, nobody says anything. I think the master calls him Grasshopper or something. And he says, when you snatch the pebble from my hand, then you can leave, or something like that. And there's, all I know is there's a lot of bells. You know, like this thing says this. And candles, a lot of bells and candles, and incense. And so when I think of prayer meditation, that's what I think they're talking about. Now, I want to say something. And, you know, sometimes I'll go to meetings and people will talk, and I want to tell you something. I don't want anybody to think I'm putting anybody down. Look, I have a certain, I took a certain road here, and the road has led me to a certain place. And the certain place is where I'm at now. And I'm going to describe that place to you. That is not a place where you have to be. You don't have to go to my place, okay? It's open to you. You know, it's not my job to impose my belief system on anybody. You know, it's only my job to expose my belief system, but not to impose it. You know, that's what it says in the book. It says in the book, right here on page 29, it says, each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. This is from my own point of view, my own language, how I established my relationship with God. In the 11th step, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers, which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. Later on it says we know but a little. You know, God will show you more ways. It says later on we encourage church membership. I only say this because you're going to find out later on I got involved with organized religion. It's something I do in order to help me and assist me, and I find very profitable in my walk, in my relationship with God. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do anything. You can do it. There's different ways of doing it in the book. You do it your way. But I'm just going to talk, because all I can talk about is me. I can't talk about you. So I came into this deal, and my concept of the 11th step, which is why I thought I was terrible at it. You will hear people at meetings talk about, you know, sitting in full lotus positions, and I can't because I just forget it. You know, it ain't gonna happen. My body don't work that way, okay? And I'm uncomfortable. Plus, I find it hard sitting in one place for a long period of time. When that happens to me, I fall asleep, which is okay. That's my way of meditating. But I have done meditation. I have done that guided. I kind of like it. It's neat. It's not something I do. But you want to know something? There are people that do it. They profit greatly. And if I'm allowed to be alive another 10 years, maybe 5 years from now, somebody will really get me involved in that, and I'll say, hey, it's the greatest thing in the world. It's not necessarily on my deal right now. I'm just going to tell you my deal. See, but what I thought was, when they were talking about through prayer meditation, what I thought was that's what you had to get involved in. That's what they meant by prayer and meditation. You had to get involved in that kind of deal. Unless you were sitting in a cave somewhere, locked away from the world, you understand, with this stuff going on, and candles burning, and incense with Chinese guys all over you, you know what I mean? You weren't really doing what you're supposed to be doing. You know, that's why I thought of meditation, some sort of Far Eastern sort of thing. And so I didn't do that stuff, and I couldn't do that stuff, and I wasn't into that stuff. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you something I learned. I'll try to say it real plainly, and I'll just try to explain it, okay? The serenity prayer at the beginning of the meeting, the prayer we say at the beginning of the meeting, listen to me. it counts. You understand? That counts. You may not think it means much. You may not think it's anything. That little prayer, that little 30-second, God grant me the serenity, you may not think it's doing a thing for you. You know, you may think it's meaningless. Every day, going to a meeting, then before, let's say this prayer, God grant me the serenity. You may think it counts. You know, at the end of the meeting, when we say the Lord's Prayer, it counts. It counts. Most of the things you're going to be doing as you're working this step that you don't think has anything to do with prayer meditation is going to count towards that deal. But you don't recognize it because you think it has something to do with... That's what you think it has to do with. You know, reading the big book counts. Listening to people talk from the podium counts. Listening to your sponsor counts. You know, there's a lot of things we do that you would not necessarily think of prayer meditation that count. And so what happened when I came in here, I heard a guy once say that had nothing to do with AA. As a matter of fact, he was a guy who was involved in sports, an athlete. And he said, the man you will be 5 years from now, or the woman you'll be 5 years from now, will be greatly dependent upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And I now know that the books you read are to a great extent dependent upon the people you hang out with. Now, you all have been here, some have been here a long period of time. You have sponsors, you have friends. You know from your past life, and you know from this life, that who you are and what you are has great deal to do with who you associate with. You know, that old saying, you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. You know, you are who you hang out with, that kind of stuff. That's true stuff. I used to think that you get this program from osmosis. You know, you just hang around with the right people, it'll just sort of happen to you. I also know that you really have to do something. There's stuff you have to do, but I absolutely believe this so much has to do with the people you focus on and the people you decide to associate with. You really do become the person. You really become the person you're looking at. You know, it says remember what it says at the beginning of the test? If you want what we have, whoever we is. Everybody has a we. Everybody develops a we. A man, a woman, a group of people. You don't necessarily put them on a pedestal, but you say, this is what you say. He says, you realize they're alcoholics, you realize they've got problems, you say, but you recognize that these people have something that you don't, that you wish you had. It says, if you want what we have and are willing to go any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So, in taking these steps, it presupposes that you're looking at other people down the road that have already done these steps, that have a close connection with the God of understanding, that you're attracted to, and you want what they have, and you're hanging around them. And what I've discovered is all my heroes in AA, all my AA daddies, that all my AA fathers, all the people that I wanted what they had, that I kept on looking at and saying, I'll never be able to be like Joe Snyder. I'll never be able to be like Ray O'Keefe. I'll never be able to do that or act that way or feel that way. I'll never be able to be like Eddie Edwards or John Glenn or Bob Sullivan or the guys that I used to hang with. I'll never be able to be like that. One day I woke up and I was like them. And I didn't even know I was like them half the time until somehow they said, you know, this is the way Joe was. This is the way Bob was. And just by hanging around them and being close to them, I became somewhat like them. And so I'm very, and when I started realizing how important it was, how associations and fellowship, how important it was in my life. I mean, you sort of like are what you eat, garbage in, garbage out, that kind of thing. You know, first of all, I understand I'm an alcoholic. And it says, unless and until an alcoholic appreciates and accepts his devastating weaknesses and all their consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. And of true happiness, he'll find none at all. And I understand that I'm in denial about a lot of my old ideas that I don't even know about. But I understand one thing about me. Even though I may think I'm John Wayne, and even though I may think I'm a superhero, and maybe even though I think I'm a superstar and all powerful, I know that I'm really not a leader. I'm a follower. I know part and parcel of being an alcoholic is a person who worries about what other people think about him, a person who wants to fit in and will do just about anything, whether they know it or not, to sort of fit in and not be ridiculed or laughed at, a person that will even sacrifice their ideals and their principles and prostitute their choices, principle, and sell their wives and kids down the river just so people will like them. That when they're thinking about what's right and what's wrong, they will ditch what's right in a second if they're hanging around with people that are doing what's wrong. I'm the kind of guy where whatever's going on, I would not ever say to anybody, I would never do that. Because given the right set of circumstances, with the right people, I would do the most dastardly things if the people around me were doing them, just because they're doing them, and I'd find myself doing them, and down the road, they'd ask me, why'd you do it, and I wouldn't even know. Just because the power of peer pressure to fit in is so great, and I'm so worried about not fitting in and not belonging because I feel so alone. And I have to recognize that in myself. It's the truth. When I'm in a country and western bar, I'm drinking beer. When I'm in Key West, I'm drinking margaritas. And when I'm in New York, I'm drinking scotch. And I never get them mixed up. I never go into a country and western bar and say, hey, give me one of them margaritas. Because I'm drinking, if I'm in a house and they're doing cocaine, I'm doing cocaine. Doesn't matter whether I'm an alcoholic. If they're smoking dope, I'm smoking dope. I may be drinking too. I'm going to do whatever you're doing in order to fit in because I'm there. And what's more important to me is that you like me. And so it goes without saying that if I really want what's going on in this book, I want to hang around. The great thing is somehow, some way, if I choose to hang around people that are doing this stuff and are serious, even though they may make me feel uncomfortable at first, because they're different from me, if I force myself to hang around them and to be with them, I will find myself changing and thinking and talking like them without even knowing it. I'll find myself doing the things they do because that kind of stuff that used to kill me out there, in other words, wanting to change and be like other people that like to kill me on the streets, saved my ass in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the lucky thing for me, and the fortunate thing for me, and it has nothing to do with brains, it has nothing to do because I'm smart or I'm a good guy or anything like that. For some reason, and if it's okay with you, I just blame it on the Lord. I blame it on God. For some reason, when I came in here, I was attracted to men that had a relationship with God, weren't scared to talk about it, and they were just people that followed this book. I was attracted to them. I would listen to other people. I would watch these guys. I would sit in the front row. I would go to all the meetings. I would go to all their step series. There would be guys in the back of the room. They'd be talking. They'd be joking. There'd be guys outside looking for girls, looking to get laid. There'd be guys smoking and joking. There'd be guys laughing, being sarcastic. You know how alcoholics are. Oh, that guy, he's a big book thumper. Like it was a bad thing to be a big, like it was a bad thing to be in here to be a big book thumper or a Christian or somebody who's believes in God. Like it was a bit, like it was a joke. There were guys that thought it was, I never understood. I said, don't they realize the meetings in here? Don't they realize so-and-so's thing in here? Because to me, this was the meat. This was the stuff. I wanted this stuff. And there were people in here that were just tourists. They didn't want it at all. And I didn't understand why they didn't want it, because to me it was so attractive. And what I've understood, what I now understand, is I can't force somebody to like this stuff. I can't somehow force some guy up there who's just here, you know, just passing through. He thinks it's a big joke. And he's going to somehow do this thing whiz by because he's so hip slick and cool. You know what I mean? I can't force him to want this thing and be attracted to the man I was attracted to. You know, I just can't do that. And I got involved with these men. Now, when you get involved with these guys, you find, guess what? You find yourself going to the meetings they go to. You know, and I'm talking about when, I mean, I met a lot of really fine women with a lot of time, but you know, I'm one of these guys, and this is what I was taught, men are with men, women are with women. And I'm not going to even go for the reasons for that or all that sort of stuff. But the bottom line is when you hang out with the guys I hung out with, you hang out with them. You know, they pick you up like an hour or 2 hours before the meeting, you have dinner. Then you go to the meeting. Then you go out after the meeting and have coffee. You find out when you hang out with them, you go to the meetings they go to. You hang out with the other men they hang out with. And the men that I hung out with that have 20 and 30 years and we're doing this program, they tend to hang out with other people that have 20 and 30 years. And you want to know something? You find that they actually avoid hanging out with people that are toxic. And you may find this hard to believe, that Bill Wilson said that when he talked about emotional sobriety and he talked about the next frontier, he said our real problem is unhealthy dependencies. Alcoholics have a lot of unhealthy dependencies where they focus all their entire life and they become dependent upon a job or a boss or a wife or a girlfriend or a million things that the world can snatch away, and they're always upset and going crazy over, and it's about unhealthy dependencies. And I would hang around with guys that were focused. They were focused on things that they were talking about in this book. They were focused on the big book. These are the things they found that were important. And I hung with these guys. And you know, you hang with these guys, whether you like it or not, you're going to be fed this stuff. You're going to hear this stuff. You're going to watch the way they react. Just the way they talk and the way they react and the way they talk about themselves, the way they react to newcomers. You're living it. You're breathing it. You're with them. Every once in a while, you ask them a question. Every once in a while, they tell you an answer. Every once in a while, somebody else asks them a question. Every once in a while, they tell that person an answer, and you hear it. Every once in a while, they suggest you read a book, and they give you a book, like my sponsor gave me Sermon on the Mount. Every once in a while, they suggest you say a prayer. Every once in a while, you know, I'd ask my sponsor's question about my thinking. And they'd say things to me. They'd say, Russell, why don't you do this? He says, whenever you start thinking that way, just say, God, please don't let me think that way. God, please don't let me think that way. That's it. So I start saying, God, please don't let me think that way. And it worked. When negative thoughts would come to, I mean, they were God-focused. They were God-oriented. They would hand me the book, Sermon on the Mount. My first sponsor said, when I asked him to be a sponsor, he said this. He says, sure, I'll be a sponsor. I just want you to do one thing or a couple of things. He says, number one, here's a book. He handed me a book called The 24-Hour Book. The 24-Hour Book, I don't know how many people know this. This is the book that was used for 20, 30, 40 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's still used by a lot of people. A lot of people don't use it, but it was a very interesting sort of book. It was a book that each day had a page, and the page would be excerpts from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Holy Bible. Which, if you read anything like Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, that's what they were about. They were about the Holy Bible, certain aspects of that, and the big book of God. And he would say, read that every day, and get on your knees and ask God's help to stay sober. You know, I'm first coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't even done the third step yet. Do you understand what I'm saying? I haven't done the third step. I didn't even say I believed in God. I didn't even know whether I believed in God. You know, and this is what happens. He hands me a book. He didn't say, do you believe in God? He says, you want to be your sponsor? Here's a book. Every day, ask God's help to stay, read this book and ask God's help to stay sober. I did it every day for 15 years. Now, I got to tell you the truth. After 15 years, I actually stopped doing it. But you want to know something? It's because I was doing other things. I was reading other stuff because by then I was involved in other deals. But doing basically the same thing. Following what these guys were talking about. Somewhere around, and you know, the more I hung around these guys, the more I read that stuff, the more I did what they told me to do, the more I worked this program, hung around with those men, the more I found myself being quiet and thinking about God. I can't explain it. I remember one time I was in a meeting once, and one of these guys said, he says, you won't know what serenity's about until you learn how to drive in your car with the radio off. How many people drive in their car with the radio on? How many people have the radio on when they're driving their car? Well, you won't know what this feels about until you turn the radio on. Yeah, that's the way I reacted too. Who's this fool? Who's this fool? Chatter. What does that have to do with anything? You know what happened one day? One day I turned the radio off. Now, I'm not saying you have to do this all the time. I turned the radio off. And you want to know something? It was okay. It was wonderful. I didn't even realize it was off because, you know, I was looking at the trees, I was looking at the birds, it was quiet. I was thinking about him, I was thinking about God, I was thinking about my life. I was probably doing that for 20, 30 minutes before I realized I was doing it. I didn't even know that I could do that because I always had to have the radio on. And I started doing it. Where did I get that idea? Some old timer told me that. Some guy I hung around with you don't get that necessarily out of this book. One of these guys that I hung around with said that stuff. And then one guy tapped me on the shoulder one day, suggested I start reading parts of the Bible. I was reading the Sermon on the Mount. I started doing that. You know, and I mean, that's a weird... One guy tapped me on the shoulder one day, And you ought to read this book sometime. You ought to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And this is the way it happened to me. One guy tapped me on the shoulder one day, asked me whether I ever went to a Bible study. You know, I might go to 3, 4, 5, 6 AA meetings a week, here and there. You know what I mean? And AA is great. I love AA. I love people in AA. I love alcoholics. I love working with alcoholics. One guy tapped me on the shoulder. He was in AA. He says, you ever been to a Bible study? I said, I'm thinking, I'm a Jewish kid from New York. I don't go to Bible study. You know, I'm reading all this material. I'm reading all this stuff. You know, I don't know whether I had 11, 12, 15 years, whatever I had. All of a sudden, I start thinking about my Aunt Joan. My Aunt Joan's been dead, but I'm thinking, what would she think? What would she say? You know? I'm 50 years old, and I can't make a move in my life because what would my Aunt Joan, who's been dead for 5 years, think? You know what I mean? Yeah, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. How many people in here run their lives, and every time they decide whether they're going to do something or not do something, pass it through the filter, well, what will he think? What will they think? You know, what's that all about? You know, think about that. You live your entire life until you die, and the bottom line is you realize you haven't even you haven't even lived your life. You've lived some sort of fictitious life that you think you should live in order to please what other people are thinking about you, and they're not even thinking about you. And then one day you wake up and you realize, why didn't I do that? Why are all those people, what is this about? And why? Because you were scared about what other people, and you know, I don't even know what happened. I had progressed that point where I recognized that a decision made on fear was crazy. And so I ended up going to this Bible study. It was a men's Bible study. It was Thursday morning. It was non-denominational. They had guys in there that graduated seminary. Can you imagine that? Seminary. These were like PhDs in theology. You know what I mean? And it was non-denominational. They had Methodists, and they had all those different Presbyterians, whatever that is, and Baptists, and also they were all there. You know, Roman Catholics, they were all there. 30, 40 guys, and they were all 20 or 30 years older than me, and it was all strange, and I sat there, and I knew nothing about the Bible. All I knew about it was the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the 12 and 12, Dr. Bob the Good Old Timers, and that little black book he gave me. The little black book, remember the little black book in Sermon on the Mount? You know, that's all I knew about. And all of a sudden they started talking, and I said, this is the exact stuff I've been talking about. They were talking about the same stuff we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only difference was, it was a group of 20, 30, and 40 men that were talking about the same stuff we were in Alcoholics Anonymous, but not one of them was making fun of it. Not one person was making fun of God or laughing at God. Not one person was saying, I don't want to hear that crap. Not one person in the group was saying, I don't believe in God. You know? Every one of those men, they may have had different ideas about the Bible, they may have had different ideas about everything, but every one of those men were locked into the third step and had made the decision to turn their will and their life over to care of God, and it was a central point in their life. You know what it says in the big book? It says in the big book, let me read you what it says, if I can find it. Where is that deal? We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitudes towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. Do you know what it's like to sit in with a group of 40 men who all believe that with their heart? And not one guy laughing at that, giggling, or saying, we don't want to hear that crap. Do you have any idea what it does for you as a human being who's searching and trying to improve his conscious contact with God to associate with men like that? Men like these men that wrote this book and still going to AA. I can tell you it had a great impact on me. It had a huge impact on me, and I stayed there. The guy who invited me there, he never came back. And I stayed there for 15 years. I ended up joining that church, becoming a deacon in that church, starting a ministry in that church with some other guys, sponsoring a couple of preachers and things like that, and missionaries, the more I hung out with them, the more I became acquainted with them. The more I became acquainted with them, they introduced me to other Bible studies, like Bible Study Fellowship. All of a sudden, I found myself going to other churches. Now, all of a sudden, I'm going to like 4 or 5 AA meetings, 5 or 6 AA meetings every week. I'm going to 3 or 4 Bible studies every week, or hanging around with these guys. Every day, we have lunch. Every day, almost every day of the week, I have lunch with about 5 or 6 guys. Either I sponsor them or grand sponsors, and my sponsor almost all the time is there. And I met him, you know what, he's been sober 56 years. He's 83 years old, and he's a Baptist preacher, and I met him in that Bible study. And he's been sober 56 years. His name's John Glenn. Every once in a while he comes here. And I hang out with him. I got 30 years, I hang out with a guy with 56 years. He's a Baptist preacher, I met him in a Bible study. God will disclose to you things that he hasn't disclosed to us. And that's my life. All of a sudden, you know, I started doing all this stuff. You know what happened? All of a sudden, my wife started doing it. All of a sudden, my 4 kids, well, 3 of my kids started doing it. All of a sudden, they're bringing all my grandkids there. They started doing it. Every day. I met with 5 or 6 of them today. You know what we do before we come over here? I go with about 5 or 6 or 7 people, and we go over and have dinner before we go here. You know, I find myself, if I'm hanging out with guys, you know, what do you think the guys I hang out with are talking about? What do you think we talk about? If you hang out with me, what do you think you're going to be talking about? You know, if we meet for breakfast in the morning, what do you think the conversation is going to end up being talking about? If you're having lunch with me, what do you think we're going to end up talking about? God and how he plays in your life. If you're having dinner with me, what do you think it's a boring thing, isn't it? It's exciting as hell. It's exciting as hell. And you know these guys, I'll tell you something about these guys. You know what they do? They stay sober. And they're happy. And they stay married for long periods of time. And they have jobs. And they feel great about themselves. And they're excited to be alive. And then we go to AA meetings and we try to help other people. And every once in a while we have a guy say, I don't want to hear that crap. I didn't come here for that crap. You know what I mean? That's okay, because this is Alcoholics Anonymous. And you don't have to believe in anything. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. And I believe in that. I absolutely believe in that. But I also have read the rest of the book. And I've looked at that 11th step, how we're supposed to improve it. Somehow, some way, at some point in time, I really think if you want what we have, you have to change. And so the person I am right now, I want to be 62 March 16th. The person I am right now, at 62 years of age, a wife of 30 years, 4 kids, 6 grandkids, it's not the guy with the savage mind who was 31 years old who walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't take any credit for that. I give all credit to God, who's the only person who I think about all the time. And you know what I find out when I'm thinking about him? You know what it says in the book? You know what it says? It says, see to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you in countless others. You know, that's what it says. It says, see to it that you, it doesn't even say see to it that you do a good 4-step. It doesn't say see to it that you have a nice sponsor. See to it that you have a nice wardrobe. See to it that you belong to a good group. It says see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And all of a sudden, I remember reading a book because it was fascinating to me. I had a small little book. I remember it was published by the White Eagle Society from England. And it was a small little book about this big. And the title of the book just blew my mind. And the title in the book said, The Quiet Mind. Can you imagine that? The Quiet Mind. I had to have it. Because I wanted the quiet mind. I didn't want the racing mind. I didn't want the chattering mind. I didn't want the committee. I wanted the quiet mind. And I read it. I can't even tell you. I'm sure it was religious stuff. I'm sure it was from the Bible. I'm sure it was good stuff. I can't even remember what it said. All I remember is that I craved to have a quiet mind. And now I live in a world, you know, for the most part, where I'm surrounded by absolute insanity. You know, a lot of you know I'm a lawyer. You have no clue. I had a person, they say, watching what I'm doing, he says, you must meet a lot of crazy people and say a lot of crazy things. I said, you have no idea. Nobody who comes to my office really wants to see me. Everybody there is under duress because their life is over. You know, all sorts of problems and craziness and yelling and screaming and crying and gnashing of teeth that they come in and it's all happening around me. And I was telling somebody today, I said, my mind, it's like Teflon. The more I think about him, the more I focus, you know, the more I focus on the world, the more I focus on what's going on in the world, the more I focus on the things of the world, the more I focus on the circumstances of the world, the crazier I become. And the more, it has nothing to do with intellect. The more I think about how I'm going to manage myself in this world, how I'm going to survive, how I'm going to make money, how am I going to pay the bills, what's going to happen, the more I try to figure out how to win, the crazier I get, and the more bad moves I make, and the more potholes I step into, and the more bad judgments I get involved in, and the more crap goes on in my life. And the more I focus on him, the more I think about him, the more I try to hang out with people who are thinking about him, the better my life becomes, no matter what's going on. And so the most incredible thing can happen to me, what you might think is a horrible thing, could happen to me at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and by 3:15 in the afternoon, I've forgotten about it. And I don't know if you're an alcoholic like I'm an alcoholic, but I'm the kind of alcoholic, like if I prick my finger, a week from now, I'm still talking about it in a meeting. I'm the kind of alcoholic, if you look at me funny, you know, 6 months from now, I'm saying that's why I drank. You know, things just bother me, you know? They just bother me. And to have things incredible, to have a life where I could deal with people and all sorts of craziness that goes on around me, and 15 minutes after it happens, it's like Teflon. It falls right off. It slides right off. And it's just happened. It's not suddenly one day at a time. I'm not even trying. It's just, it's like gliding through life. It's like being rocketed in that fourth dimension. And why? Because of who I associate with. Because this morning at 7:30 in the morning, just like I've been for the last 14 years, I got up in the morning, I got out of bed, I got dressed. My wife said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Honey, I'm going to the same Bible study I've been going for the last 14 years at Thursday morning." And she says, "Oh, okay." And because every Thursday morning she asked me the same thing, "Where are you going?" And every Thursday morning I say the same thing. Because apparently she must have that Teflon mind too. I don't know. It's a woman thing. It's some sort of tape. "Where are you going? When will you be back? Who were you with? What was going on?" It's got to be a woman thing, because I never say to her, "Where are you going? Who were you with?" And some sort of deal. But I don't know. I'll figure it out one day. And so I went there, and I hung out with those guys. And we sung a few songs before them. We sung a few songs. And, you know, about half those guys are in AA. Because I brought them there. You know what I mean? Because they want to know what was going on. And we had some bagels, and we had some donuts, and we read the Bible, and we talked a lot of crap, and we had a little argument, but it was a good-natured argument. And then we sat around for about 15 minutes, and we prayed. We prayed for different people's problems. We prayed for what was going on. We prayed for your problems. You know, we prayed, and then I got out of there. And you know what I was thinking? There's like a little after effect. I don't know about you, but the more I get involved in God, the more I have an after effect. You know, where all of a sudden I'm thinking about God, even as I'm driving to work. I'm thinking about God in work. You know what I mean? Then I put out a few fires. I do a few things. And by then, it's about 11:45. Time to meet with my guys. I drive over, and I meet with my guys. Darren was there. Bunch of guys were there, and we sit around for an hour or so, have some lunch. You know what we talk about? You got it. We talk about him. I get back to the office, and you know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about him. A few more fires happen. A few more people call up. A few more things happen. I'm sort of thinking about their things, but I'm also thinking about him. Then all of a sudden, I meet somebody at like 6 o'clock at night, and we get into a car, and you know what we're talking about? A bunch of guys. We talk about him. Then I go over to have dinner. We sit around dinner. We talk about our lives and what's going on and how incredible things are, how wonderful things are. We talk about our blessings. We talk about him. Then I get to come over here and I get to talk to you. Then we drive home, and when I talk to you, I'm all geeked up, because you know what I want to talk about? Yeah, I want to talk about him. It's like crazy. It's really sick. You know what I mean? You know, I'll tell you, I go somewhere to like a rehab to get cured of this, but I feel too damn good. You know what I mean? That's the problem. And you know, because when I wasn't talking or thinking about him, I felt kind of crappy and I drank a lot. And so then I drive home with these guys, and as I'm driving home, we're talking about, well, you know, him. And then I get up the next morning and I do the same thing over and over again, and every once in a while I read a book about him, or the big book about him, or I read it, you know, and then all of a sudden, sometimes I'll read a book that isn't even about him, and it's about him. I see him everywhere. Because, you know, it drives you crazy. You start getting fanatical, because When all you do is think about him and talk about him, you see him everywhere. People come up to you. They ask you for help, and you say, well, he must have sent them to me. You know, this is something I must do for him. And then all of a sudden I read something in the big book, and it says, being all-powerful, he'll give you everything you need if you stay close to him and do his work well. It talks about help being maximum service to God and other people. I say, well, it must be because of him. This guy must be because of him. And all of a sudden, my life becomes God-centered, and I read this stuff in the book about the central factor in our lives, that he's become the central factor in my life. I said, I guess that's what's been happening to me. It's a horrible thing. Don't let it happen to you. Watch out for these AA. Watch out for these big book thumpers. Hang outside with those guys that are smoking and joking, looking to get laid. Hang out with that stuff. You know, you'll get what they got. You'll get what you got. It's real simple. That's the way it works for me. That's the way the 11th step works for me. And you know what happens? It says, finally, and this is, I'm going to end with this. This is what it says about the 11th step. Finally, it says, in thinking about our day ahead, we may face indecision, we may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God, you know, there's a lot of asking God here. Here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Can you imagine that? You ever have a situation where you do something that just blows your mind? You say something that blows your mind? You act in such a way it blows your mind? You go to an AA meeting, you try to describe your book, how you set the group, how you did something, where you said something, and it was amazing, the effect it had. You couldn't believe you reacted that way. And you say something like, and now that's not me. I'm not like that. I would usually explode, but I acted completely different. And it's so unusual, it's so amazing to you that you have to divulge it to your group. It says, what used to be a hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, now listen to this, because this is going to happen to some of you. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, time takes time, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. Whatever that means. I can tell you this, it's not the plane of intellect. It's not the plane of intellect. It's not the plane of intellectual or being smart. A lot of smart people out there killing themselves. A lot of smart people out there throwing cocaine up their nose, drinking themselves to death. A lot of brilliant guys up there dying. Ernest Hemingway put a shotgun in his mouth to blew his brain out. There's a lot of people out there hurting children, hurting themselves that are brilliant, have high IQs. The inspirational plane is not the intellectual plane. Be more and more on a plane of inspiration, we come to rely on it. Can you imagine what it would be like to leave an inspirational life with inspirational thinking all the time? What would that be like? What would that feel like? Be different than the savage mind. God bless you.